Boys, welcome to the latest Love Sport podcast. We've been on a hiatus again, all due to me. I'm Paul, one of the hosts, joined by John and Pete. How are we, boys?
Oh, sensational. It's good to be able to chat to a fellow Tassie Devil Foundation member now. So it's good to be joined on the line with yourselves.
Absolutely. And what about you there, John?
No, I was struggling this morning to try and think of a time when I've been better and I couldn't really nail it down, so I'll go with that. Thanks for asking. I appreciate it.
Well, for those who do believe in God, I hope Good Friday's treating you well. You're not eating red meat and you've been able to say thank you for the gift we've been given. For those who don't, that's cool as well, to each their own.
And if you don't, we can be thankful for the culture that we live in, which was all sort of provided to us by the people who started in that space.
Spot on. Well done. Pete, you just brought up before, really interesting. It's been a very tumultuous week in AFL. We started out the week with the Tassie Devils announcing they'd reached over 100,000 foundation members, which is $10 as a starting pack, $15 if you want all the stickers and everything like that. And I think they're up to around 180,000 people who've signed up as an inaugural member.
Yeah, there's talk that there could be up to 200,000 foundation members as early as kind of mid-April at this rate. So it's pretty special. It's kind of cool, you know. Only $10 to be able to sign up as a foundation member. But looking at one of the directors of the Tassie Devils AFL team, he actually came on ABC Radio and said the initial order of stickers was only to be 30,000, but now they're actually closer to 300,000 stickers to be able to fill the order of the foundation members. So it's pretty wild to be able to see that this is the support that they're getting at the moment.
And for anyone poo-pooing it, I'll just put it into some context. Some of the greatest AFL players that have ever played the game come from Tasmania. It is an absolute Aussie rules, mad place in Launceston and Hobart, Devonport, everywhere like that. They love the game. It's about time they got a team. So they're wearing their traditional kind of state jumper. They've got a lot of ex-AFL players. I know Matthew Richardson and Jack Rewalt from Richmond, for example, already part of the initial kind of, not board, but the organising committees. And it's great for Australian sport to have a good news story for once. And look, whether that translates to 30 or 40,000 full-time members, I think it will. I think their first season they'll have 30 or 40,000 members, including interstate members. So it's a good news story.
I think it's a pretty good lesson for everyone in actually looking after and nurturing the places that where people actually like your sport and not worrying about everywhere else first.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Spot you know on what I mean? I think there's classic there for the Australian. Do anyone remember a group called the Australian Rugby Union?
Yes. Oh, you might have to remind us there, JT.
Well,
you might
have to remind us. Mate. They were a fabled national team that was winning World Cups and really only made players in two places, Queensland and New South Wales, some in the country and some in the city, and some in state schools and some in other schools. But now we're spread out all around the country and it's an absolute shambles.
Well, we'll come into that soon. I do want to focus then on, so really positive.
But I'm actually really happy for the people of Tasmania. They love the sport. Yep. And they got a lot of heat for when the jumper first came out, I went, that just looks like their teal cup jumper, that one. And then I looked at it again, I went, oh, it actually is. And I thought, you know what, good on them. Because if there was a Queensland team wearing a Queensland jersey or jumper in an actual national comp, I'd drop everything and go for them.
And the thing is, they will refine it over the years. We know, you know, you're going to have a home and away alternative, whatever, which has now become vogue in all sports. So they'll have some pretty cool designs. You know, my dad and I decided to do it because we've thought Tassie should have always had a team. And it's really good to be part of something new and really exciting. Like, people are actually excited for this team to come in. So that's the reason we did it. And then Pete got on board this week as well, which was unreal to see, Pete. I was really stoked for you.
I've gone purely for the aesthetic value that I really enjoy the jersey. I enjoy the colours. I enjoy the logos. And a little bit of peer pressure from yourself. So you know what? I'm more than happy to be part of that foundation member crew.
No, and the other thing that's really exciting is that at the training base and when they build their new stadium, they're going to have a cutoff point for the foundation members, and all the foundation members' names, they haven't decided how they'll do it yet, will be on either a massive plaque or forever in perpetuity at the training base and at the ground, which I think is amazing.
Oh, that's awesome. I didn't even realise that.
I just think it's something really cool and easy. I mean, I don't think it's easy to implement. I know how these things get done, but it's a pretty cool thing that if you, you know, travel down from Queensland or New South Wales to go see a game, you can always stop at the training base or the ground and go and say, hey, look, there's
aren't
our name.
Aren't all the members' names on bricks at Windy Hill and stuff like that?
They've got a little bit of that. And I know same with Richmond over the years, but there hasn't been that thing where, you know, it'd be awesome, wouldn't it? And really easy to do. I think because of the other thing is, John, that the name, you know, that there might be 100,000 or 90,000 Essendon members, but it changes all the time.
Yeah, no, so, I saw there was something where they did a fundraiser and they got,
yes, yeah,
and everybody. But anyway, I think those things are always good ideas. Like, why not? And lean into them a bit more. It's
totally, you know, agree. I mean, harder to implement than we think. But look, then we've got the negative story on the AFL, guys, which, look, people can tell me all they want that it's for the health of the players and we need to keep their privacy and everything. And there's some really good rationale behind what people are saying. But the AFL this week coming out and admitting that they've sent people off for testing and kept their names hidden, and there's 120 players at the moment minimum that have been under the drugs code that they've got agreed by the Players Association and the AFL. I don't know what your thoughts are, guys, but we knew it was there, but the level of not giving a crap about fans and not giving crap about perception by the AFL again, it stinks in my mind.
Yeah, look, there's no doubt it definitely does. I think what we need to take into mind here is what the AFL's process that's currently in place. So they currently have kind of two branches. They've got the three strikes policy in place as well. So, you know, the first strike, they get a test positive for an illicit drug. That player then receives a fine. Second warning, then that player is actually named publicly, and then come the third time that it happens, that's when there's, you know, serious things that get put into place. So it's quite an interesting process with this three strike policy. A third strike incurs a 12 match suspension in that as well. So the thing is, we also have to remember that AFL's policy is currently backed up by kind of the chair of ASADA, Richard Ings, where he's actually kind of said, look, it's one of the few Australian sports that has an out-of-competition illicit drug policy at all. So ASADA kind of deem what AFL are doing as a strong policy, which is quite interesting.
And that's really well put, and people have put that towards to me as well. But I just want to put this point of view out there. Doing illicit drugs is illegal, right?
Yes.
So we're also, you know, I know they talk about players' welfare and this strong, you know, kind of drug code. But in the end, if I steal from a shop, I'm stealing and I'm going to be in big trouble, right? Regardless.
Well, maybe. That's not necessarily the case anymore, but maybe.
Okay. Well, you know what I mean.
You might get arrested, but you might not actually do any time.
Right, yeah, okay, understand that. But I know stealing from a shop's illegal. I know doing cocaine is illegal, right? So yeah. If a player self-reports, so he goes out on a bender on the Sunday night, they played on Saturday, goes out on a bender on a Sunday night, self-reports on Monday, it's not counted as a strike.
Well, I think that's bull. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Sorry.
No. So what I'm saying,
I mean, I think the AFL is continuously seems to have lived in a world of all the Australian sporting bodies that they get lauded as being the, you know, the at with it, at one with all the things that you need to be at one with as a sporting body, and I've thought for years that their drugs policy is a complete nonsense. But how can you? I mean, that's no different to me. Yourself, you know what you know. You do. the wrong thing with your partner, you self-report, but you self-report to someone else and they say, oh, well, I'll tell you what, if you go over there for a while and then you come back, we'll say it's okay.
And so a player has to sit out that week or 2 weeks, depending on what's in their system and everything like that.
And how does that impact gambling? Aren't we all tied up in bed with gambling companies?
Absolutely. Of course it's affected gambling results.
I mean, if you pulled a player, listen, imagine if Chris Fagan pulled two players from his team because he decided he was going to throw some money on, it's probably not a great example at the moment, but on Collingwood last night, and he pulled two players out and I said,
hamstring tightness.
Soreness.
Oh, here it
they've
is.
Got general soreness.
General soreness or calf tightness.
Yeah. It's complete rubbish. And why shouldn't they be subjected to the exact same standards as every other sports person in the country?
I think the thing is, as well, I hear people saying it's really good because they've got this policy that's going to have counselling and so forth for players. Now, if there are players that are addicted, and they say, look, I really need help. And, you know, for that kind of thing, I'm perfectly, of course we want the best for our players, right? But a lot of these people come into the system at 17, 18, 19 years of age, and they've got all these lessons and everything, but they're earning money that most people their age never earn. They're in a cocoon of the club where their meals are made from. They've got doctors, physios, they've got everything, right?
And they're told they're amazing from start to finish.
And so what lessons are we teaching our... I know we shouldn't be on a moral high ground, but sport does reflect on our values as a society. And what are we teaching kids? Hey,
well, I'd much prefer my sports people, and you know, we're all involved with them, all three of us. Now, not necessarily at the AFL level, but, you know, coaching young men and young women sometimes at the age where they're able to do stuff and sometimes on the precipice of it is... I'm not sure that I really think it's a great idea to be letting them know that, well, you can't drink anymore, but I tell you what, if you take a bit this, you can start, and you'll be sweet. Now, that's the message they're not just getting from all their peers and all the rest of it, because that's what's happening in the game.
That's where I was coming from, guys, and that's the thing that I think has been forgotten.
I'd rather go for a drink.
Yeah. Well, it's legal.
But they lose their place over that.
If they're 18, it's legal. This is the thing that I just want them to, the AFL and all the ex-players who are saying it's fine, and they are, why don't they come out and say, you know what, it's actually illegal. So I understand that people do it and everything like that, and I'm not going to talk about my past, but it is illegal, right? Is that something that's not being spoken about at all?
It's the scourge of wealth, mate.
Oh, guys.
It really is. And it's also the scourge of our current society, which is that we will say, oh, it's for the benefit of the player to allow them to do whatever they want. And I think it just puts people long term, it's a disaster. Now, you know, there's plenty of examples of people who, you know, whose lives have been ruined by this stuff. And anyway, it might not even be just the players, but what about everybody that's on the scene around them?
Well, you know, I don't care if this gets me in trouble as a Richmond supporter, but, you know, there's a player that's lauded that I think actually set us back many years. And I'll say his name. It's fine because it's my opinion, is that Ben Cousins should not be lauded at Richmond or West Coast. I know he was a great player, but the damage he caused, not only to himself, but his family, his friends and other teammates, we shouldn't be lauding these people. We should be saying, well done, you're recovering. But the kind of reverence we're giving these people is just, it sickens me, to be honest.
Well, how did his best mate Chris Turley die, Paul?
Yeah.
Craig Turley. I mean, like, wasn't that all part of that same scene?
They were all part of the same scene, you know. Sam Kurtz.
He was a great player and he was a club captain and he died from misadventure, and it was all to do with that same lifestyle. I believe that's correct, isn't it?
Look, West Coast had a culture that we know was really bad when it came to that thing, but we'd be really silly not to think it's not at every single club. Every single club would have this going on, and it'd be more players than we'd ever believe.
Yeah, well, God rest his soul. I remember when Craig Tilley, I really liked him.
Daniel Chick, who went to the West Coast Eagles, he's at the moment saying that his life's ruined and a lot of other people. I'm not having a go at the Eagles per se. They were just an example years ago that the AFL could have used and really gone strong. Instead, I think we've gone piss weak. You know, I'm going to go do coke tomorrow and no problems. I'll go self-report. I mean, it's out of this world.
Well, if anyway. I self-reported it, imagine me self-reporting at school. I can't come in. Why not? Oh, look, you know, had a big night in the cubicles at the casino.
Yeah. Well, look, it would be happening in all sports. I think the thing that the AFL has put themselves out there as the number one sport in terms of all their policies and procedures and what they're doing. We're going to find out some really big stuff in the next few months after Wilkie's revelations to Parliament under parliamentary privilege. You've got an ex-Melbourne president who he has said he was forced out of the AFL for saying that executives should also be tested. And within 6 weeks, he was out of that role. You've got a Melbourne doctor saying that he knew of dozens of cases where players were sent to a private clinic. This is going to come out in the next, you know, 6 to 12 months, big time. And it's going to be a dirty, dirty look.
Well, I guess every time you've got drugs and gambling involved, that you need to be careful, don't you?
Oh, hey, guys, we want to talk about gambling, if we can segue across. I know it's not completely your things, guys, but you would have heard about Shohei Ohtani, who I always talk about as being one of the great baseball players of all time. You heard about his gambling issues this week?
Very vaguely. Have you heard about him, Pete?
No. Please go into more detail, please.
Okay, so, you know, Shohei Ohtani, who's gone from the California Angels or LA Angels over to the LA Dodgers on the biggest contract of all time, worth close to $1 billion Australian or over $1 billion Australian, can pitch and bat. He's one of the best I've ever seen in my 40 years of following baseball. Gone over the Dodgers on this big deal, can speak extremely limited English, so has had a translator who's been a trusted friend for many years. Now, this last week, it's come out that $4.5 million was transferred from Shohei Ohtani's account to an illegal bookmaker. Now, they're not allowed to gamble. They're not supposed to actually gamble on any sports at all, let alone baseball. And it's come out, or it looks like everyone... This is why we're going to be so careful, because everyone jumped on Ohtani and said he's going to be banned for life and this, that, and the other. But it looks like his interpreter had faked even the uni he'd gone to. He'd faked some of his credentials and transferred $4.5 million, it looks like, from Ohtani's account to an illegal bookmaker.
All right, so is the interpreter taking it looks for like, on behalf of all those other people?
I don't... From what everything I've read, everything I've seen, I actually... It's one of those things where, you know, every day you could change your mind on it. But the fact that most of these players really don't have control of their finances, it's their...
Mate, look, that's way too convenient.
I know what you're saying, and that's exactly what I said. If you had heard me day one, I might go, Tani, what an idiot. But this really
like
doesn't...
This goes down for 3 days and the CEO keeps their job, but they sack the dude working cleaning the floors.
Well, look, I just wanted to put it out there, guys. I don't know the answers, but one of the most interesting stories, because you're talking about a generational talent. You're talking about this guy can pitch as well as any pitcher. He can bat as well as any batter.
Yeah, but that doesn't buy many extra things.
But it makes the story amazing. So keep an eye on it, guys. If you don't know enough, have a bit of a look about it. I'm not saying he's free, but it looks like... If you're saying it's a fall guy and that's what you feel, if it is that, they've done well.
No, I'm just reacting to what you're telling me, but like it wouldn't surprise me if, say, the interpreter has a nasty car accident.
Well, the funny thing is, though, it's funny how these things come out and we now find out that the interpreter doesn't have the qualifications he said and all these different things. It's funny how things come out post a massive thing, isn't it?
Yeah, Pete, what do you think? You know as much as I do, which is nothing.
Yeah, look, while we're on the line here of doing my own little quick investigation, actually about to post here in the Love Sport Facebook group, so that way everyone else can have a quick read about this discussion as well and really try and understand a bit more about this. Otani situation, because again, there's a few questions which obviously, you know, starting to be raised here. The obvious one is, were actually any bets placed at all? And Otani has come out and basically just said, no, there weren't. But, you know, when money starts leaving one person's account, lots of questions have to start being raised. There's a few conflicting stories which start being raised and really need to be followed up. And potentially, will there be any preferential treatment, because Otani is pretty much the golden goose of Major League Baseball at the moment. So,
good call.
It's going to be really, really interesting to see what's going to go on and happen here.
And to those who follow baseball, happy opening game day. For those who know me, I'm a massive Mets fan, so we'll disappoint again this season. But for those who love the game, if you're ever in America and you don't like baseball, but you like sport, go along for the day. Have a couple of drinks, have a hot dog. You'll actually really love the atmosphere. And if you go midweek, there'll be no one there and you can just basically do a tour of the stadium yourself. So it's one of the great sporting highlights of my life, is going to different ballparks. So.
I find it incredible, Paul. Like, I know you love baseball, right? And I get it, where it used to stand in the American psyche, but where it does now, it just doesn't seem to be the same thing. I just don't understand the type of money they throw around on some of these players. Like, where's it come from?
Massive, yeah. I think it's because of the tradition. There are massive sponsors. What people probably forget a little bit about baseball is that you've got the Mexican market, the Japanese market, it's their number one sports. And so you've got wider than a US market.
I mean, still, like, it seems to be on the slide in America.
I think, yeah, look, it was, and it's certainly, this is something that the last 2 years we've seen a massive recovery in the amount of people watching on TV and going to games. And one of the things they've done, and I'm going to do a separate podcast on it, the players after each game are giving away so much signed stuff, so T-shirts, bats, gloves, balls. They're really engaging with their supporters, and that really seems to be bringing a lot of people back as well.
Oh, that's good.
So, it's actually a really great case study in players who are realising what they need to do, and they're actively doing it without instruction from the league. So you'll see it after a game now. You might see 30, 40, 50 balls given away, heaps of bats, gloves, and it's really bringing the crowds back. They're getting huge value when they go. And TV rights there, mate, 162 games a year that they play before they even get to finals. And so they do have a huge TV deal. But look, in all honesty, it is NFL, absolutely spot on. Baseball's come back to number two, and NBA's the slider. NBA slid down to the third sport, and come finals, NHL actually outrates NBA in a lot of cases as well.
Yeah, well, they've certainly sowed that garden bed for themselves, haven't they, the NBA?
They really have. And that is a complete another podcast. It really is. And they say go woke, go broke, and who you get into bed with. And you couldn't feel it would be much truer.
Boys, yeah, well, if you keep teeing your fans up like they've done, eventually they're going to say, I think I'll do something else. I mean, I know that in my life, I just don't have time for dealing with sports and competitions that don't like me.
That's what a lot of people are feeling this week about the AFL, John.
Mm.
You know,
not that it's all about me or anything like that, but I've just taken that the every fan thing is like,
no, the everyday fan thing. Well, put it this way: the AFL has this culture of people travelling interstate to see games. It's a huge thing, right? So Collingwood played Brisbane last night, and you would swear that. I mean, the loudest noise in the crowd last night was probably from Collingwood to an extent, I think. And if Richmond are doing well, or Collingwood or Carlton, you get what, probably 40%, 30% to 40% of the crowd is interstate supporters.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'm wrong. That's why I was leaving.
No, I think that's fair enough, because I know when I go, I choose to go to games when it's not those ones.
Yeah.
Because I like to have a little bit of space around me.
And so a lot of people in the AFL, there's a real big culture of travelling down to Melbourne to see a few games. If you're from, you know, from Brisbane or Sydney or Adelaide and WA, there's a real travel culture. And the AFL now having the second half of the season where they don't tell you when you're playing is really, well, my dad and I are just like not going to go see a game interstate in the second half of the year because we don't know when Richmond's playing that weekend. And so yeah. they really just don't care about us anymore. They've said that basically.
It's about TV.
For TV. So, Pete, you're from New South, mate, but I'm telling you, the AFL has a huge travel culture. People set up their whole weekends for travelling away and stuff, and mass numbers, not small numbers, huge numbers of people do it every weekend.
Oh, absolutely. Look, my aunt and my uncle, my aunt's a Sydney Swans fan, and my uncle is a Hawthorn fan. So I'm well used to them basically saying to me on a Friday afternoon, hey, just so you know, I can't come over for a coffee on a Saturday or Sunday because I'm heading over to so-and-so. So quite well versed to the huge travel culture and people basically just up and leaving to go visit, you know, far-flung lands and random stadiums in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah,
but I even had my best mate took his family down to Greater Western Sydney for the Collingwood game. I'm like, he said, do you want to come? I said, dude, I worked in Blacktown for a while. It's cool, but I'm not going down there for a weekend.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I've been down to that ground a few times myself. It's actually quite a fun, it's almost a suburban ground in some ways, even though it's modern.
No, it looks awesome, but I still just don't want to go there for my holidays.
No, I understand that. I mean, if we do that, we normally base ourselves in Sydney and then travel out there, which is an adventure in itself. Sorry, Pete, I know Sydney's New South Wales is fantastic, but I do find travelling around parts of New South a little bit harder for me.
Totally understandable. Do not worry.
Big shout out to all my friends that are still in the beautiful area of Glendinning there near Mount Druitt, where we spent about 3 months living. So, yeah, got no dramas. I'm all good.
And I'm one of those people. I think every single state and territory has something amazing about it. I love travelling in Australia, so I'm not going to be one of those people who puts down different areas. I mean, I'm from Victoria, live in Queensland, love travelling to Sydney. So
I would like to know if I go down to follow the lines, though, that maybe Lachie Neal hasn't self-reported from having a few sherbets out at the, at the Pioneer Tavern.
I don't think anyone, the way he plays, would have any issues if he had a couple of sherbets, mate, because he is a fantastic footballer. Segwaying across again, guys, the AFL this year has really started quite strange with two of the worst starts for grand finals we've ever seen. We've got the Brisbane Lions on 0-3, and after last night, Collingwood on 1-3. But I don't think either team is actually too far away from being okay. And there's a lot of panic around the world. But, you know, I don't see any team absolutely dominating this year. I am scared about one team doing well, though.
Is that Carlton?
Yeah, I was going to say, we all thinking the same team at the moment. Yeah, we are thinking the same team at the moment, aren't we? They're going to be a very interesting side, aren't they?
Well, I think they're there. I think Sydney's going to be really good this year. I really love the way Sydney's set up. Carlton as well. They've got a bit of depth. They've got, you know, and that's the worry for teams like Brisbane and Collingwood, who are excellent teams. If they give too big a head start, even though we're early in the year, you can really put yourself behind the eight ball.
Yeah, it's been a bad start for the Lions. We know that, but I won't say anything about game one. Game two, okay to be expected. Last night, you know, we've really had it over Collingwood at all times until the grand final. Now, I think it's not being really, it has to be acknowledged that I think that the losing the way that that grand final was lost and how close they came after so long of hanging around and just missing out on at preliminary finals and stuff like that, I think that's knocked their psyche around a lot. They need something to happen to kick them into gear because I think that they're all super flat. And even just getting run down by Carlton, it was just like another thing. And now Collingwood's like, they really need something to go their way and definitely can't be another knee injury.
Well, the knee injury that you are talking about, I think is going to be the reason you won't win the granny this year because his ability to distribute the ball from the back line, it was elite. I'd say he'd be in the top three or four players in the comp.
He was growing. Kadima's really going to be like, and this was, and he still hadn't really, he'd broken out, but he hadn't taken the whole comp by the scruff of the neck.
No, but he's that floating backman who seems to always be in the right position. But then when he gets the ball, the speed of which he delivers a 50 or 60 metre kick upfield is too hard to cover. He's a sensational footballer. So
it's really amazing when you're super key absolute talent of the guys you want to build the club around when you have two of them getting severe knee injuries in a space of, you know, 8 months of each other. That sets you back a long way.
It really does. And the thing I'd probably want to say, and I think we all agree on this, and I was reading, I always go and read the losing teams, whether it's Richmond or Brisbane or what. I love reading the comments from the supporters of the teams. I think it's one of the funniest things you can ever do if you want, you know, 5 minutes of levity. But everyone bagging Danaher and Hipwood, right?
Yeah.
I'm going to say this. I think Danaher tries his guts out. And I think even last night he was beaten, but, you know, the ball wasn't coming to them at all well. But Hipwood, for the money he's on, he needs to pick up that game, mate. That's huge money the club is paying him to get 5 or 6 touches for a whole match.
Yeah, we've been waiting for Eric to come good for a while. So, I mean, no doubt he knows it. Like, but none of this would have been counted for anything if we hadn't have lost by under a goal in the grand final last year. You know what I mean?
No, absolutely not. No.
That's where it's all at, because it would have been worth it, but it's not. So Eric's got to work harder. I mean, he's a local guy.
Well, so, mate, you've also got teams.
There's not going to change. Nothing I do is going to change it around. They need to get out and do some things, and hopefully they do, because as you know, at the moment, my good friend Paul, that not only am I sort of a little bit out of it on sports full stop, but every time I do put my head up, the teams that I like, they manage to let me down over and over again. So I'm sort of getting over it.
Well, I can totally get that. And there are some teams in absolute limbo at the moment and going backwards, and that's still West Coast Eagles. It's my Richmond who have to do a complete rebuild. But a couple of the teams I'm really loving the way they've set up, and I think it's going to really bode well for them going forward from the first few games, even though one of them hasn't won a game yet. I love what North and St Kilda are bringing to the table for their fans. Pace, guys who can distribute the ball really well, and I think both of their futures are looking, looking really good for both clubs.
I guess that's unless the AFL and the powers that be in the media can destroy Alistair Clarkson's life again.
Well, look, that is the other thing, guys. It looks like the case will be settled in coming weeks. The racism allegations. It looks like what is being asked between the two parties is that Hawthorn are going to come out and I'm not sure of the exact words, guys, but I think they're going to put an apology out. I think there will be an undisclosed amount to the Indigenous parties involved. And it looked like yesterday both Fagan and Clarkson were very happy with the outcomes. That's from what I've read. I wasn't there. I don't know behind the scenes, but it looks like that'll be settled sooner rather than later.
All right, just for the chance to leave my chin again, I would love to see the AFL, now that it's got this mea culpa moment, give a massive donation to lots of pro-life charities as well.
Okay.
How about that? Because this was essentially based around that issue as well as the other one.
You're not wrong. It was.
And that's really never been a subject of discussion.
That's a very fair call. A very fair call. Whether, if people read about this, that was one of the things that was alleged, and I say the word alleged, was pressure on someone to give up a child, or give up a baby. So that's a fair call from you as well. Guys, it's been a really negative podcast from me, but I have to continue in the negative, vein. To me, World Cups and Olympics are absolute pinnacles of sport. Right? Regardless if you say you don't like the Olympics or not, when the Olympics come around, if you're a sports person, hard pressed for you not to chuck on a few of the sports. Am I semi right there?
Yeah.
So
pretty much bang on the money. Yep.
So you're a weightlifting and diving expert every 4 years.
I become a table tennis badminton expert for sure.
And equestrian 3-day event.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. We understand that an older horse that needs to be there, 14, 15 years old, being with the...
Yeah, it's a partnership.
Trampolining over here for me, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
It's that partnership of the horse and rider.
Rhythmic gymnastics.
Rhythmic gymnastics. Yep,
that's the other one.
That's hard work there, Pete. That's hard work, but it's still good.
It's that twirl of the I don't even know what they call the battens, but that's certain, 180...
Clubs, isn't it? Isn't it battens, clubs, and ribbon?
Oh, yeah. And those ribbons. It's the
Yeah, so you also have the inflatable ball that you float, you put across your the back of your arms and back of your neck and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, oh, it's beautiful. Absolutely magical.
It's not easy.
Tell you what, though, guys, a sport that I used to love in the Olympics or one of the events in the Olympics I absolutely used to love, which I still think is amazing, decathlon. I used to think that was just a two-day amazing event. But anyway, just me.
It was one of the pinnacles of the whole thing.
And I loved it.
Yeah.
I think we're a lot older than you, Pete, but we can tell you there was a game on the on a lot of systems that was called Daley Thompson's Decathlon.
How good was that?
I used to love that game.
Mate, the early part of mine and a couple of really high-level people who should have become high-level cricketers was wasted on a combination of that and the use of sherbets and things.
And exactly, and the broken joysticks that came out of that game.
No, that's where the lighter came in handy because you could get it
really across the buttons. Yes, across the buttons. Oh, the days.
Power up.
So when it comes to the Olympics, the Labor government of the moment have said that they're not going to do the redevelopments of the Gabba and other precincts that they talked about. They're not going to have what they call a North Bank out at the old current Victoria Park golf course, and that they're going to instead spend hundreds of millions of dollars fixing up, I don't even know what it's called anymore, but it's the
QE2.
The old QE2.
QSAC, I think they call it.
QSAC, the Queensland Sports and Aquatics Centre, where I think that's where the Firebirds and the Brisbane Bullets are based up there as well, at their arena. Now, Pete, if you travelled up to watch the A-League W and so forth over the years, you might have gone out to that stadium.
Yeah, exactly. I think I've driven past it a few times, to be honest, as well, and seen it. So I'm well aware of the renovations that kind of needed to happen to this and the upgrades that were kind of necessary to make sure that we met the criteria ahead of the Olympic Games.
Well, we've got light rail, which is trams, we've got trains, and we've got a road network that is absolutely devastated at the moment, needs a lot of money to go into it. So no one would disagree with that. But if you're going to hold the Olympics, you can't do a half-butted Olympics. You have to spend the money. Oh, now, I'm going on record to say that Queensland shouldn't have gone for the Olympics. I've said that all along. I knew if we were going to do it, we had to spend an absolute fortune. And that was, I wasn't against what would come out of it. Amazing stadiums, a great experience and all that. I was just against the amount of money it was going to cost. And now it looks like we're not going to get anything like an Olympics. It's going to be embarrassing in my mind.
By the way, if you guys just look behind your sofas in the living room, can you just see if you've got a spare $3.4 billion that we can invest towards a new stadium? Because if you've got that, we could actually host these games and things could still go ahead. It's only a spare $3.4 billion.
Hey, so. Not discounting the amount of money. Don't go for the Olympics in the first place if you don't think you can afford the infrastructure. The infrastructure was never going to be cheap to do.
Yeah, well, look, maybe we all convert ourselves to become car share drivers. I know there's a few businesses, not naming anyone in particular. We could all become car share drivers if you wanted to support the infrastructure that is, as you say, very underdone at the moment.
Mate, I just spent $5,000 on a 2015 Toyota Yaris getting fixed up. That's still not running well. So,
we'll scrap that plan then. Okay, scrap that plan.
Share driver.
I actually do agree with you on the notion that, you know, don't put your hand up if you're not going to follow through. I think that there's a very concerning trend in Australia at the moment, and politically and socially, like in the community and all that, that we want to have all the good things without any of the bad stuff that comes with it, you know? And like, if we want to trot the world stage and be seen as a like international, you know, leader and here, there and everywhere and all, but to turn around for the second time, maybe in 2 years.
2 years, yeah.
And say that we can't afford an event that we asked for, right? and plan for and all the rest of it and whatever, talk COVID, whatever, who cares, doesn't matter. Like, there is, but there's also a sort of that, so that I find that, like, incredibly embarrassing and frustrating as an Australian and a Queenslander, yeah?
Yep.
I know that when I first travelled as a young man, and I would go to even to England and Ireland, Europe, you'd tell people from Brisbane, they had no idea. You'd say, Australia, okay, got it, you know what I mean? That's changed. And if we do be in the Olympics and it's, oh, well, we can't afford it, so we're out, I think the stain, that we're going to be a laughingstock around the world for forever.
Well,
and I don't just mean laughingstock, I mean embarrassment. And there'll never be anything else. But I do think the flip side of this is that there is infrastructure. There are things around us that can be used and used better than what they're talking about. And, like, I mean, like, we only just had the Commonwealth Games in Gold Coast.
Yep.
And, like, if you want to... If you go to Cusack, and I know it well because I went to school at Mount Gravatt, which is right next to that stadium, like there's no train near there. There nope. is a dedicated bus line. It's full of traffic. Like there is a train to Carrara. It's not the same, but it's also pretty much a virgin green space that can house all that stuff. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
And so, but they, if they're going to have talks with the Olympic Committee, and I'm not there and I wouldn't even pretend to be at that level or anything like that, there has to be some give and take here, because I think that there's starting to become a time where these events are only going to be able to held in the USA, China or Saudi, because even European countries are having to go across. So you make the Olympics a Queensland event, not a Brisbane event, which is what it was sold as in the first place. Yeah, is that right?
They did put that together. The Olympic Committee said needs to be held in, you know, realistically one city. If you are going to hold it between Gold Coast, Sunshine Coast and Brisbane, you need your public transport updated. And that was something that was agreed to on as well.
That's right. And so that's clearly not happening for us on the Gold Coast with the...
Or Sunshine Coast, mate. The train line doesn't even go through to some of the major spots on the Sunshine Coast.
Yeah, but luckily for all of us, they got that one done for the inner city that's full of public transport already. Which I can't imagine, but I don't know. I'm no engineer, but I think it must be harder to dig a tunnel and a hole underneath the Brisbane River in 2.5 years than it is to build an extra lane of highway out here on the flat.
Mate, it takes me 1.5 hours to get to work for a 40-minute drive if I was driving now, so... we all get it, and Sydney would get it with Pete as well. But look, you either go all in or you just don't go for these things. And I agree, this could be the last kind of Olympics held outside of those major metropolises. You wait to see the next World Cup when the US have it. They're already ready to go. I mean, look at all their stadiums. I know the population, but their stadiums are ready to rock and roll. That's got to be one of the easiest conversion events ever.
Yeah, but we've got stadiums galore around here. You know what I mean? That's the thing. As sure as night follows day, you know that there's going to be with Tasmania in now, and I think that they sort of pulled back a little bit on that stadium requirement idea. But like, the Gabba's under pressure as a venue that is barely fit for purpose for cricket anymore, and for the AFL. So it's got to be done anyway.
Well. Just for Pete's and any of the listeners who don't go to the Gabba on a regular basis, and I've said this all along, there are certain spots you can't even get to your seats. It'll say, go up aisle 41, your seat's 603, and you go there and they go, oh, no, you have to go around the other way. I mean, there's things like that at the Gabba. There's bits and pieces. It looks fine, but there's bits and pieces that have kind of been added on. There's viewing spots everywhere that you can't see certain things. And it's a stadium that they've done really well to get it to where it is now. But, I'll leave it at that. I think the Olympics, it's a huge thing. It's just been, guys, give me some positives on sport before we go, guys. Give me some positives.
You want a positive? A positive is that the A-League have found a different broadcaster to then be able to continue showing the competition.
Say that as a negative.
No, it's a positive because they found someone who could jump in and it's not just someone holding an iPad up and live streaming on Facebook. So, you know what? That's a positive. This comes after the collapse of Global Advance, who were in charge of basically the production of games, which was reportedly worth about $12 million per season. This comes to play after Global Advance has gone into administration with a lot of money owed to the APL. And look, to be honest, a red flag should have been the fact that Global Advance only came into existence in 2020 and had previously not had any elite competitions under its management. But again, let's turn this into a positive. We now have a last-minute deal with a new organisation, the NEP, for the rest of this season, ensuring that all A-League men's and women's competitions will continue to be televised, effective immediately.
The 13 people?
It's about 13 people and about three dogs, I believe.
Does it stay on Paramount?
Maybe a cat as well. Yes, we'll still remain on Paramount Plus, yes. Channel 10 and Paramount, now, yes.
There's a silver lining. Right?
Come on, the Halo series was amazing. Not.
Mate. I think that the strategists for the A-League have been bunkering down with the dudes from the ARU for a couple of years, yeah?
I think so.
What was her name? They need to bring Renee Castle back over and put her in charge of both, like an umbrella over both. That'll work. And a combination of Bulldogs.
Well, I've got a positive and a sad one for someone who's followed this sport for, you know, most of my life. Looks like the swan song season for Kelly Slater, one of the greatest older athletes that's ever existed and has to be one of the greatest athletes of all time as well. Kelly Slater basically is announcing his swan song season.
Yeah, well, that's... I'm glad he's still going.
He's amazing. He's honestly unbelievable.
What about... what's his name? Who's the Aussie surfer who just lost his brother?
Mick Fanning.
Yeah, Mick Fanning just lost another family member too, so condolences out to him and his family. That family sure seen a lot of tragedy.
They have, and
thoughts to them.
Really nice call there. And the good thing, if anything, is they've just got so much support from Northern New South Wales and Southern Queensland, fellow surfers and community members. So they're very well valued. And Mick Fanning's a great example of someone who really grew up through sport, started out came out a bit knobbish, grew up, and he's a really good pillar of his community and really good supporter of so many charities. And he's just a great example of, not turning your life around, but making something positive of something that may not have been. So well done, Mick.
He's embraced, those normal values of family, community, loyalty, friendship, and all that. And seems like a thoroughly decent chap to me. And I send my prayers out to him.
Yeah, well said, mate. That's a huge one. Pete, over to you, buddy.
We can also go with some good news about the recent performances of the Australian futsal national team, where they ended up playing last night against Thailand in their final of their tournament. Unfortunately, they went down 7-2 in the final, but not to be outdone. There were some great performances across their tournament, which is great. So now the guys return home for the next week or so and then get themselves ready for the Asian Cup, which is incredibly exciting to look forward to.
Pete, has Thailand had a bit of the wood over us in the last few years, or am I not remembering results correctly?
In futsal, absolutely. Futsal has been a sport that's been completely under-resourced for a number of years here in Australia, and only recently has the national team, within the last kind of 2 years, started to be funded a bit more by Football Australia and really start to pick up, where the team was able to travel across to the likes of Solomon Islands and then again, most recently, to head across to Thailand to play in the National Futsal Championships against the likes of Afghanistan, Malaysia and Thailand as well.
And also congratulations to the Socceroos on two amazing performances in the last week and a bit as well. Some really great performances with a lot of players that people wouldn't particularly recognise.
Yes, I think we mused ourselves the other day, Paul, with the idea that the Australian national men's football team now has gone back to having the sort of profile it used to have before 1974. And they boys just keep on playing hard and do amazing things with seemingly no stuff. And I love the current iteration of this Socceroos team, and I'd travel to follow them and watch them play.
And the Matildas with a lot of injuries as well, guys. That just means that new players are getting a go and just building the depth in the Matildas is the way I see it.
Exactly right. There's always time for a quick regeneration and to be able to introduce some fresh players into that lineup as well. So it's always a good thing to be able to get this happening, especially ahead of the Olympic campaign in Paris in just a few months, to be honest. So it's always great to be able to see a bit of regeneration in there.
And guys, finally, the EPL is back. It's felt like a really disjointed last two or three years with the seasons, just with, you know, so many international breaks and different things like that as well, and obviously World Cups. And the Premier League is back this weekend.
It is. We've got 9 games left of the regular season to go. Newcastle play host to West Ham, and I'm sure that, John, you're on the edge of your seat waiting to see whether or not David Moyes and his West Ham crew end up kicking too many footballs over the stadium fencing, and whether or not, Eddie Howe and his offsiders will end up, you know, remaining at the club come the end of this season, or whether there'll be an opportunity to have, again, a bit of a changeover, especially now that things have got a little bit stale. For Paul, you've got your Villa folks playing against Wolves come Sunday afternoon, or Sunday morning here in Australia, sorry, Saturday afternoon over in the UK. So that will be an interesting battle between two sides. Villa obviously trying to push to try and squeeze into potentially a Champions League spot, if not a Europa League spot. Finishing inside the top five is definitely on the cards. And Liverpool will play host to Brighton and look to maintain a little bit of pressure. And everything will realistically come down to what happens over at the Etihad Stadium, where Manchester City are playing host to Arsenal. This could be the kind of the game that really determines who ends up lifting the Premier League trophy come the end of the season.
1 point between the top three. 1 point. It's just an outstanding season in that regards. Arsenal on 64, Liverpool 64, Man City 63. And then you've got Villa and Tottenham fighting out that fourth and fifth. It looks like fifth will be good enough for the Champions League, Pete, at the moment on the differentials. And
thanks for the coefficient.
Thanks for the coefficient, which, yeah.
Is that going to favour Paul? Is that your lot? Or?
Oh, mate, are you saying does it favour us?
Who's currently in fifth?
Tottenham, but they've got a game in hand. So they win that, they go into fourth. But Man U are 9 points off Villa, but they've got a game in hand. But the goal difference gives us an extra point. They're on 0 goal difference. We're on plus 18.
They won't catch you. Don't worry about it.
So it's what do you guys need to know? Because I think we're starting to fall apart with injuries. Do you think we'll hold on for Champions League spot?
Yes, I my tip at the moment is Villa to finish fifth and still make it into Champions League, like I say, because of the coefficient.
Oh, thank goodness. I
think that you've also got that sort of energy that, remember last year we had a bit of a downtime coming out of Christmas.
Yep.
And then we got it back together with the 10-game run. Like when you can see that goal, it hasn't been there for a while, you can take it, but you want to do it now because it's a lot harder the second year.
Well, guys, one final thing about that. I'm not sure if you heard this story, not being Villa supporters, obviously, Pete Liverpool and John being Newcastle. But there was a calls from tens of thousands of English supporters during the week for the Aston Villa social media manager to be sacked. I'm not sure if you've heard about that.
Yeah, have heard some interesting calls. It's the classic fickle nature of football fancy.
What were you saying there, John, as well?
I said, it's not you. You're not the media manager for Villa, are you? You've had all kinds of jobs like that over the years.
No, I'm not. But I tell you what, the current guy did a good job giving grief to England because he celebrated on the Villa page, Youri Tielemans, who scored both goals against England midweek, celebrated pretty hard using the Villa page and caught the ire of many people, including politicians who wanted our media manager to be sacked.
Well, you know what? Like, I just don't even know.
How funny is that?
You have to have some dignity in yourself. You've got to know who you're working for too, and where you actually, where your money's coming from. I just don't get it. But anyway.
Well, he's working for Villa, and it was a Villa player who scored two goals. So,
but the coaches of England's also one of your guys too, isn't he?
He hates us, mate. Gary Southgate can't stand Villa. I don't know why, but if he could choose never to choose a Villa player, I reckon he would.
Don't worry, he'll be United head coach in not too long.
Guys, any final stuff on sport? We haven't been doing this for a fair while.
I've got a question for Pete.
Oh, here we go.
Peter, do you think that come the Euros that the coach of Germany will be Jurgen Klopp?
Post-Euros, potentially. I think that Nagelsmann will end up maintaining things at Germany for the Euros, and then we'll look for opportunities elsewhere. And that will come off the back of the fact that Germany have a good campaign, but not a campaign where they should be as competitive as they could be. So I think that it's the type of a job that Klopp will be offered, whether or not he ends up accepting it. But post-Euros, it's the type of the job that, yes, he will be offered it.
Well, here's a point for both of you. I actually think, like, if I'm a guy like Klopp, I'm thinking, looking at Germany, this is the ideal time to come in, because there's not often that Germany have had downtime. So the expect you're actually not coming after like a Beckenbauer or even the previous guy who, you know, winning World Cups is nothing. It's just an abyss.
I
reckon it's a great time to become German coach.
I don't disagree with you, but I actually believe Klopp when he says that, you know, he's actually very, very tired and actually wants a break and to spend time with his family. I actually believe he will do that for a couple of years before returning to management in some format. And I don't think the national team...
Totally different time frames, man. They only got a couple of, you know, it's not like...
I don't think that'll... But the problem that being then is once his football fire's reignited, I don't think coaching a national team is going to be enough football for him.
Well, I don't believe anything he says, so I don't really agree with you.
Hey, that's why we have opinions, people.
All right. Sorry about that. Anyway, good luck. Good luck to... Anyway, actually, no, not good luck to Jurgen Klopp. Anyway, yeah, that's enough of that.
Guys, it's been really fun. I've definitely missed talking sport with you guys. We're going to try and do it much more regularly on a weekly basis. This is the Love Sport podcast. Pete and John, any final words?
Don't forget, you can jump on the Love Sport Podcast Facebook group. You can request to join that, and every so often I do end up posting different things that we've spoken about today. So I've put in there so far an article about the Brisbane 2032 Olympics, about the AFL's illicit drugs policy, as well as the Otani Major League Baseball investigation going on. So jump on that, the Love Sport Podcast Facebook group.